I am dedicating today's show to thinking, acting, and dreaming big. And both my guests understand thinking and acting big. As I mentioned, my first guest is Mark Moses, and I'm so thrilled to have him on. A friend of mine, Jack Daly, was helping me get in touch with Mark, and Mark actually is the real deal, the real entrepreneur. Currently, he coaches 26 of North America's top business leaders. He grows entrepreneurs and CEOs and so much more, and he also really focuses on how to dramatically grow their businesses, their people, and elevating their own performance. Matter of fact, Mark is one of those typical entrepreneurs, those serial entrepreneurs. He started his first company at age 19, and he's successfully built and sold two companies during his journey. He's won the Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year Award and so many other awards, including the Blue Chip Enterprise Award for overcoming adversity. It's hard to believe all the things that Mark has done, and a lot more to go. Matter of fact, his last company was ranked the number one fastest growing company in Los Angeles as well, and number 10 on the Inc. 500. He has done some things athletically, it's hard to believe, but this is a guy who's really, really driven. He's done a 9 full-distance Ironman triathlons, the Hawaiian Ironman World Championship 3 times. And matter of fact, in 1992, he actually won the U.S. National Squash Championship. I'm so thrilled to have Mark Moses joining us today. Mark, welcome to Let's Talk Business.
Good morning. How are you?
All right, buddy. How are you?
I'm terrific this morning.
Hey, I'm so excited to have you on the show. We've got a whole half hour here. As I mentioned, Mark, the show is all about entrepreneurship. And if anyone knows that beast, it's you. And I thought one of the things that I like to do in starting out the show is to get a feel for you and your journey. It really helps our listeners. And then we get into what I call the meat of the interview. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Mark Moses and your journey as an entrepreneur?
Well, it started when I was in high school. My dad had a clothing business and went bankrupt in my last year of high school. I needed to make more money. My cushy lifeguard job wasn't going to get it done, so I wanted to go to college. I went my first year of college. I saw this sign in the career center that said, "Be your own boss, have your own business." It was part of a franchise program called Student Painters. I said, okay, I'll give that a try. And my first summer, we did $70,000 worth of business, and I made $18,000. I thought that was pretty cool. It only cost me $4,500 a year to go to college back in Canada in 1985. Thought that was a pretty neat experience. I decided to do it again my next summer and made $35,000. Thought that that was really cool, and originally I thought I was going to college to become an accountant. Thought, I don't think so anymore. I can always hire an accountant. And so I decided to pursue my career as an entrepreneur. I packed up my U-Haul, drove from the Toronto area south to Amarillo, Texas, turned right, and eventually ran into California and got to California and started the student painter company out here. We grew it in 4 years from zero to 250 branches run by college students. We had a total of 3,000 student employees in the company. And then I sold it when I was 26. That was my first journey as an entrepreneur. And then I got into, during that time, I got a mortgage. So I felt qualified to be a mortgage guy, and myself and the guy that did the actual mortgage on my home became business partners, and we set up the mortgage company, and that's the mortgage company where I eventually met Jack Daly, who ended up joining us a few years later as our COO, Chief Opportunity Officer, then became a partner in the company, and we grew that thing to $1.6 billion in annual volume over the 13-year period, 65 offices around the U.S., and 550 people, or just a little journey?
Just a little bit of a journey, Mark. And I have to tell you, boy, I really admire the what I call the real entrepreneur. And it brings up an interesting question. As you and I know, many times people go into business and they're labeled an entrepreneur. And I was curious, you know, based on your journey and what you see, you know, to you, what is an entrepreneur? And do you think they're born or made?
That's a good question. What is an entrepreneur? An entrepreneur is someone that is has a vision and is out there pursuing their vision, and they're really passionate about what they do.
Born or made, Mark?
Are they born or are they made? That's a good question. I don't know that I know the answer to it.
Well, it's an interesting subject, and I really appreciate your candor. I know that as I opened up, you coach a lot of entrepreneurs today, and many of them are real leaders. And I have to tell you, based on my 30-something years as an entrepreneur, some people believe that they are really born, and little by little, with all the schools teaching entrepreneurship, and you can get degrees in entrepreneurship, they believe that they can be made, and, you know, maybe it's a little bit in between. But I have found that some of the great ones, and I've had them on the show, and I've got to know them, many of them is in their DNA. And one thing I thought would be great for you to also talk about, and that is growth. That last company you talked about, you know, you have an idea, and before you know it, with time and a lot of work, 500 and plus employees, over $1 billion in sales, and obviously that did not happen by luck. So maybe you could talk about the things that you did, the plans or the goals that really relate around, you know, thinking and acting big.
Well, there's a variety of different stages. One of the experiences I had, my partner Brett and I were running our offices in Los Angeles, and this guy who ended up becoming the best man in my wedding needed a job, and we funded an operation for him in Orange County, California, and he did a great job. He grew it really quickly. As a matter of fact, within 9 months, that division was making $200,000 in net income per month. So we were very excited. And one day, I remember it in October of 1996, he actually left and took most of the company with him and most of the division with him. And because we only spent one day a week in there, we didn't really know the people, and they all were revolved around him. So he set up this competing company just down the street, two blocks away. And we had just signed a lease to move into a 25,000-square-foot building. I had set up 160 cubes, and we only had 12 of us when we actually moved into this space. So you asked about thinking big, and I said to my assistant at the time, look, I'd like you to find me a marching band. USC would be great, and I'd like you to find me an elephant. Tear a wall down in our building, and I'd like to ride the elephant into the annual meeting. The message was that if you think big and act big, you will be big. Let's go do $1 billion. So that was our thinking bigness, I guess, at the time. And it was an amazing experience because the employees the very next day came to work. And even though some of them had been laughing, crying, and all that stuff, they brought little stuffed elephants in, and crystal elephants, and ceramic elephants, and they started putting those elephants on their desk and saying, hey, pal, you may be nuts, but I'm with you. Let's go make that thing happen.
Well, I tell you what, listeners, if you go to Mark's website, www.markmoses, that's M-O-S-E-S, .net, you will see a video there, and you'll see him on that elephant. And, Mark, one of the things that I think would be invaluable to our listeners, and our listeners are entrepreneurs, CEOs, and even would-be entrepreneurs, and that is maybe you could talk about some of the specific things that you did in order to build this billion-dollar company. In other words, not just the belief, but the certain actions, the certain processes, principles, whatever, that led to this. And if you could share that, that would be invaluable.
Sure. I had this really, really terrific business coach over the years. He coached me for 10 years during my time at Platinum. And he suggested to me that there were five things that if I focused on, just five, I could dramatically grow my business. I said, man, I'm a good student. Five's not a big list. Tell me what it is. I'll do it. He said, Mark, number one is you need to focus on the vision and direction of the company. You as the CEO, the entrepreneur, the leader, need to set the vision, set the course. Where are we going and how are we going to get there? Number two is you are the ultimate responsibility for cash. You got to watch the cash. Even though you might have finance people and accounting people and a CFO and all that stuff, at the end of the day, you are the one that will suffer if you run out of cash. Your CFO can leave, your accounting people can leave. So at the end of the day, you got to be watching the cash. Number three is you got to have the right people in the right jobs. I learned along the way that as the company began to grow and grow and grow, I needed to continue upgrading the talent in our organization and bringing people on that were better than me. Number four was key relationships inside the company and outside the company. For example, I ask CEOs and entrepreneurs all the time, what are the top five relationships, the most important relationships to the company, that if they were to leave the firm, you're in deep trouble? And people would say, well, if I lost my bank line, that would be really bad. Or if I lost a key vendor or supplier relationship, that'll be bad. If I lost one or two, three of my key, most important, high-margin customers, that would be really bad. Or if I lost a key employee in the company that was very integral to where our business was headed, or they were running a division or in a key role, that would be very bad. So the CEO's job is to be responsible to ensure and that we don't lose those relationships and ultimately own them. They're the ones that own those key relationships. And point number five is a process to continue to learn. As a CEO, I always kid around that we're not yet competent, and we should continue to learn, whether it's through industry conferences, whether it's participating in groups like EO, YPO, Vistage, Tech, or other forums, industry forums, where we can continue to learn, whether it's visiting and learning from your competition. Maybe there's competitors of yours that are around the country, going in and visiting with them and sharing ideas as to what's working in their markets and learning from them as well. So those are the five things. I found when I focused on those five, I could materially, as a Canadian we would say, move the puck down the ice.
Well, I think to a large extent also, Mark, that you clearly saw where the puck was going to be before the puck got there. And I also think that is a trait, sometimes they call it vision, that really good entrepreneurs have. But I think those five tips are extremely, extremely valuable. And again, listeners, if you're just joining us, you're listening to 91.1 FM right here, WREK, 100,000 watts. You're listening to Let's Talk Business. I'm your host, Mitch Schlimmer, and we're talking to entrepreneur, serial entrepreneur, Mark Moses, all the way from California. As I mentioned, you can also learn more about him and what he does at www.markmoses.net. One of the things, too, Mark, that in doing my homework and trying to get a sense for you is that obviously, you know, that process of goal setting and measuring and all that is extremely important. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that and how you use that, including planning, because as I expressed a little bit earlier, doing over $1 billion in sales was not luck.
Well, let me share with you a little bit about my methodology, my belief system, and it's going to sound anal retentive to you, but let me just share it with you. It's what I use in my coaching practice that has enabled us to achieve 182% growth in revenue across my clients over a two-year period. So it's really figuring out where it is you would like to be 3 years from now. So, for example, what are the revenues and what are the profits 3 years from now. The second thing is, what will it take? What are the three or four measurable things that it will take to guarantee we get that done? Now, I didn't say hope. I didn't say wish. I said, what are the three or four things that it will take to guarantee we get that done? What will stand in the way of making it happen? A lot of folks at the end of a period would say, well, these are all the reasons why I didn't hit plan. So, 3 years, where do I want to be? What's it going to take to guarantee I get it done? And what's going to stand in the way? And I like to reel it in a little bit tighter. If I want to be here in 3 years, where do I want to be 1 year from now? So let's just take 2012, for example. Let's just say I want revenues to be $10 million, and I want my profits to be $1.5 million. What three or four things, measurable, specific, will it take to guarantee I get that done? For example, let's just say I want to grow sales by $5 million, and each sales guy that I have does about $1 million apiece. So I need to hire five sales guys that can each do $1 million apiece. But a couple of those guys won't make it just because, and I might lose one of the ones that I have, so I might need to hire eight people that I believe that can do $1 million in sales, at least, to ensure or guarantee that I end up with a net of five. Then I ask myself what's going to stand in the way of making that happen. Again, these are they might be the excuses, they might be the real deal, it might be people sometimes say, well, cash to pay for them, I can't find these people, like whatever they are, whatever the story is. And then the final question is, what can I do to overcome what's standing in my way? So here are all the excuses. Now here's how we're going to overcome all of those so when the end of the year comes, these are not an issue. We've already discussed how we're going to overcome all this baggage that we have. Once we've agreed on where we want to be and what's it going to take and all that stuff at the end of 1 year, I like to reel it back even further. Where do I want to be by the end of Q1, by the end of the first quarter? You'll never guess what the next questions are. What will it take to guarantee that I get it done? What's going to stand in the way? And how can I overcome what stands in the way? And then we create initiatives under each one of the drivers, the guaranteed items. What are the 2, 3, 4, 5 initiatives that we're going to pursue to guarantee each one of those drivers get done? What's going to stand in the way? How we can overcome what's standing in the way? Who owns it? And when will it be done by? Follow that methodology, you can then achieve the goals that you've set for yourself. Again, it sounds ain't a retentive, yet it enables entrepreneurs and CEOs to gain tremendous clarity because too many people just show up to work every day and just do. They show up and they react to whatever it is that happens every day. For example, they come in after freshening up their cup of coffee. They sit down, they turn on their computer, and they start checking email. Well, how long do they check email? 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 1 hour, 2 hours. For some, it's all day. As stuff comes in, and because they want to be type A diligent, get back to everybody that's responded, they end up getting distracted by stuff that's completely unimportant that ends up consuming most of their morning. Then the lineup begins at the door, people asking them questions of what we need to do, or this issue or that issue. Now it's lunchtime. They go to lunch, they come back after lunch, check a little bit more email, a few more questions, a few more lineups at the door. Before they know it's 4 o'clock and they're on their way home and, oh my God, I didn't work on the three or four items that I needed to work on today that were the most important in me driving my business this quarter, so I'll come back in tomorrow and do it then. They arrive tomorrow and the process repeats itself and they never find themselves focused on the drivers they're going to ensure that they hit their goals for that quarter or that year.
Some great advice, Mark. And as I like to say to people all the time, you know, as simple as this also sounds, focus on the 20% that really matters. And as you said, there's so many distractions. more now than ever between Blackberries, iPhones, internet, Twitter, this, that. And sometimes you got to get back to the basics. And one thing I wanted to ask you, and that is, as you and I know, and you told us this story, and during the journey, we all face certain obstacles and adversity. And many times it turns out for the best, but when you're in the middle of this storm, it doesn't feel that way. Maybe you could talk a little bit about not only failure, but more importantly, how to overcome obstacles.
Well, I think it would be helpful if I just gave you a few examples of some of the challenges that I had. One of the big ones was the best man at my wedding leaving, like I shared with you a few moments ago, leaving abruptly, setting up a competing firm. About 7 or 8 months later, we had a corporate fire, and the city inspector says it was going to be 60 days before we can get back into our building. Well, that was a bit problematic with 150 people in our center at that time. Then Wall Street collapsed in 1998. We had 275 people in our sales center, and I had to lay 240 of them off over the weekend. It was at a time in October 1998 when Wall Street had pulled out of our business. And then a few years later, we had our bankruptcy schedules filled out because we just completely ran out of money. From making $1 million in net income a month, we started losing $1 million in net income, and it was just we lost everything that we had. Bankruptcy schedules filled out until an angel investor fell out of the sky, wrote us a check, and we were able to fight another day. A few years later, my 3-year-old son had a brain tumor and 2 emergency brain surgeries, and if some of that other stuff couldn't take you right out of your game, well, that sure could. So those are some examples of what I experienced. Now, what did I learn from dealing with those and how to get through some of that stuff? Well, one of them is keep a good attitude. And because if you don't, if your attitude goes south, the confidence that you're giving your organization is real poor, you'll send those people into panic. I like to drink red wine. I like my glass half full rather than half empty. Never give up. No matter how tough it is, believe in your vision and don't give up. And I think of Carrie Strug, the young gymnast, the Olympian that had either broken or sprained her ankle and ran down that final event, the vault, landed on one foot and won the gold for Team USA. It would have been really easy to say, hey, look, I broke or sprained my ankle, I can't do this, but she stepped up and did what she had to win. So I think it's mostly attitudinal. And get back to figuring out what is my vision, where is it that I want to go, how am I going to get there, how am I going to overcome the obstacles that I'm dealing with, who do I need to help me make that happen, and get to it. And the other thing that I learned during chaotic and adverse times is communicate regularly with the company. We went to a point where we were communicating every single day. We would get the company together for just a few minutes during some very chaotic and turbulent times to share with them what's actually happening, such they don't go into panic or create their own rumors that become their own reality. I also learned when things were turbulent and uncertain that if I needed to cut in the organization, to cut early and cut deep, I could always hire people back if I had to. Those are a few tidbits. I hope they're helpful.
It's all been helpful, Mark. And as I alluded to earlier when we started here, you are the real deal. You didn't pick this up in a book or in a course. You've done it a long, long time, and you've been through the ups and the downs, and obviously you're out there today helping a lot of people, doing a lot of speaking, and a lot, lot more. And I think in starting to wrap up, I thought what would be really interesting is maybe you could talk a little bit about what I might call, you know, those skills or those mindsets that you translate, you know, from being an athlete to business. In other words, doing a triathlon is not easy. Forget about 9 of them. Forget about Hawaii. And, you know, you've done it. And that mindset is really critical. And maybe you could talk a little bit about what it takes to get through one of those and how it helps you in business.
It's really funny that you're mentioning that topic. I produce a newsletter or my e-news once a month, and the one that's actually going out today is called Ironman Lessons for Business Success. So I'll share just a brief story with you before we run out of time. I knew that I did this recent Ironman in Arizona, November 20th, and my goal was to go sub 11 hours. So in the world of Ironman, that's a pretty awesome time. And my best ever had been 11:39, so I could visualize, my vision in my head was 10:59:59. And I knew that if I could achieve that, I could ultimately possibly win my division. So I had a vision for it. Secondly, I built my plan from back to front. What's it going to take for me to ultimately achieve that? I had a checklist that I followed throughout the day. First of all, the checklist in the morning and all the things I needed to do. And then throughout the day, I had this checklist in my mind that I followed all day. I could have gone harder at times, but I knew I would burn out later. I stayed focused on my plan and executed it with relentless focus and discipline. I drank when I didn't feel like I wanted to drink. I ate when I wasn't hungry. I took my salt tablets when I wasn't sweating that much. I measured everything throughout the day and ultimately ended up finishing the race in 10:56 and won the thing by 6 minutes.
Just incredible.
I made up a big deficit during that time, but it was... I could have gone harder to chase my competitors, but I might have crashed and burned like they did and not being able to execute my plan.
Well, I tell you what, Mark, one of the things that you said to me was, isn't it funny that you bring that up today? And what you probably don't know is that I am a fellow athlete, and I clearly understand those skills and how you transform them, and I have no doubt how you've used them. And matter of fact, we actually have a foundation that empowers our youth to live their dreams. It's called the Magic Wand Foundation, and on our board is none other than Scott Rigsby. And Scott has gotten, obviously, a lot of coverage based on, obviously, him and his journey. And I tell you what, I really enjoy always watching that. And I always admire, you know, the things that you guys are able to do. And as I say many times here, Mark, I never know where the time goes here. It always goes so fast. I just love meeting and getting to know such wonderful entrepreneurs like yourself. Again, listeners, go to www.markmoses.net. That's www.markmoses.net.